Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. On today's program, you will hear stories from John Russell and Katie Weaver. We end our program with another episode of The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Mario Ritter Jr.
China has denounced the election victory of Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen, saying, "Reunification across the Taiwan Strait is a historical inevitability." Tsai and her Democratic Progressive Party, or DPP, won re-election Saturday with a 57% majority with more than 8.1 million votes. The DPP also won 61 of 113 seats in the legislature. China's official Xinhua news agency accused Tsai and the DPP of cheating and using repression and intimidation to get votes. It said the result was a development that deeply worries people who hope for peace. China had used similar language to describe Tsai's first election victory in 2016. Speaking in Africa, Chinese State Councillor Wang Yi said the One China principle will not change because of a local election on Taiwan. He added that it will not be shaken because of the wrong words and actions of certain Western politicians. While claiming victory, Tsai said that Taiwan would not give in to threats and intimidation from China, and that only Taiwan's people had the right to decide their own future. The United States' top diplomat, Mike Pompeo, praised Tsai for seeking stability with China in the face of unrelenting pressure. China considers Taiwan a rebel province and threatens to use force to bring the island under its rule. It has periodically sent military planes and ships through the Taiwan Strait, separating the sides as a show of force. Tsai has rejected China's condition for negotiations, which states that Taiwan must accept that both sides belong under one flag. The two sides have been separated since 1949, when the communists took control of mainland China at the end of the country's civil war. Tsai told reporters after the election that pressure from China will continue to exist and could even become heavier. Some experts, however, believe that China will have calm relations with Taiwan because Tsai no longer needs to show her strong opposition to the mainland. Tsai's presidential campaign brought attention to mainland China's efforts against protesters in Hong Kong. Mainland China would seek to rule Taiwan the same way, Tsai said. "I don't think China will ever back off," said Yun Sun, who is with the East Asia Program at the Stimson Center, a research group in Washington, D.C. She said Chinese officials hope to start talks at some time. She added that it is in the mainland's interest not to overplay it. Wang Qingxing is an assistant political science professor at National Chung Kung University. He said China's reaction so far is verbal, or is only in words. But he said it is unlikely that Tsai will hold any talks with Chinese officials during her second term. Wang noted that Chinese President Xi Jinping would insist on his goal of ruling Taiwan. Last year, Xi gave a speech calling for China to rule Taiwan under the one country, two systems model. That term describes China's policy toward Hong Kong since 1997, which was supposed to permit Hong Kong to keep its local laws and government systems. But huge protests against Chinese rule in Hong Kong through much of 2019 have tested that model. Public opinion studies have shown that a majority of Taiwanese reject that idea. Tsai suggested that the two sides may establish communications if China respects the will of the Taiwanese people. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Once again, it was #DirectorsSoMale at the Academy Award nominations Monday. Congratulations to those men, said presenter and actor Issa Rae pointedly after the announcement of nominees for Best Director. Denied were filmmakers like Greta Gerwig, director of Little Women, which was nominated for Best Picture and other awards. Lulu Wang's The Farewell, highly praised by critics, received no nominations. Continuing another troubling trend was #OscarsSoWhite. Among acting nominations, Cynthia Erivo of Harriet was the only person of color out of 20 actors honored. Awkwafina, who won a Golden Globe Award for her lead performance in The Farewell, was denied a chance at an Oscar. Other well-known stars like Jennifer Lopez, Beyoncé, and Robert De Niro were also overlooked. Jennifer Lopez saw major success in 2019, almost 30 years into her acting career. Her much-praised performance as a New York City stripper in Hustlers was reported to be her best chance for an Oscar. She was nominated for a Golden Globe and other awards this year for her work in the movie. But the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences did not recognize her with an Oscar nomination. The 2019 film version of the famous American book Little Women was nominated for Best Picture. However, its female director, Greta Gerwig, was ignored in the nominations. Critics and movie fans had considered Gerwig an extremely strong candidate for her second directing nomination. She was nominated in 2018 for her direction of Lady Bird, but lost to Guillermo del Toro for The Shape of Water. To date, only one woman has won a directing Oscar,
Catherine Bigelow, for the 2008 film The Hurt Locker. Other noted female directors who were passed over this year: Wong for The Farewell, Laureen Scafaria for Hustlers, Melina Matsoukas for Queen and Slim, and Marielle Heller for A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Gerwig is married to Noah Baumbach, who directed Marriage Story. He was also denied a directing nomination, although his movie, like hers, was nominated for Best Picture. A record 62 women overall were nominated Monday, representing about a third of all nominees. However, the Academy put the most weight behind a few male-driven and man-made movies. It is the 87th time in Oscar history that all the directing nominees are men. Overall, the 2020 Oscar hopefuls represent the least diverse field since the hashtag OscarsSoWhite campaigns of 2015 and 2016. However, Bong Joon-ho's Parasite made history for South Korea. It is the first Korean film to be nominated for Best International Film. It also became the 11th non-English movie nominated for Best Picture. The 2020 Oscars will be awarded on February 9th. I'm Katie Weaver.
The latest diet trend in America is also an ancient human activity. The activity is fasting, or not eating food for a set amount of time. Social media apps and Facebook groups are appearing for people who do intermittent fasting, or fasting on a part-time basis. Like other diets, intermittent fasting helps you lose weight by setting limits on eating. But instead of limiting what you eat, it limits when you eat. One of the more popular approaches to intermittent fasting is called time-restricted feeding. It is not as difficult as some of the other approaches, since the fasting period can include the time you are sleeping. The basic idea of time-restricted feeding is to limit eating to an 8-hour period. You then fast during the day's other 16 hours. Many people make the eating period shorter or longer. Some eat just one meal a day. In other approaches, people fast several days during a week. On fasting days, some people may permit themselves around 600 calories. Whatever the approach, people are not supposed to overeat when they stop fasting. Melissa Bro-Bankston is a CrossFit instructor in New Orleans, Louisiana. She tried intermittent fasting as a way to reduce her snacking. "I wanted to limit the amount of time that I was eating," she said. Studies on the potential health benefits of intermittent fasting are still limited, including for its effectiveness with weight loss. For now, limited research suggests it may not be any better for weight loss than reducing calorie intake over the long term. "It's really another way of fooling your body into eating less calories," said Krista Varadi, who studies intermittent fasting at the University of Illinois at Chicago. Courtney Peterson, of the University of Alabama at Birmingham also studies intermittent fasting. She suggested the benefits of intermittent fasting are not as great as some might suggest. Unfortunately, intermittent fasting gets a little hyped, she said. Some health experts say intermittent fasting might be too difficult for many people. They point to a study of 100 people where those placed in a fasting group lost about the same amount of weight as those on diets that restricted calories. The fasting group had a dropout rate of 38%, compared with 29% for the caloric restriction diet group. But intermittent fasting may be easier for people who already skip meals when they are too busy, said Varadi. People interested in intermittent fasting should talk to their doctor before trying it. Health experts do not recommend intermittent fasting for children, people on some medications, and people with a history of eating disorders. I'm John Russell.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. 1892 was a presidential election year in the United States. In that year, most parts of the American economy were expanding, but one part was not doing well: agriculture. The result was the birth of a new political party. It was called the People's Party. Its members were called populists. Stan Busby and Morris Joyce tell about the populists and how they campaigned against the Republicans and Democrats in the election.
In the late 1880s, a North Carolina farming publication described America's economy this way: "There is something radically wrong in our industrial system. The railroads are making much money, yet agriculture is failing. The banks are doing great business, yet agriculture is failing. Towns and cities grow, yet agriculture is failing. Wages were never so high, yet agriculture is failing." Historians give four major reasons why agriculture was failing in the late 1880s. One was the high cost of transportation. Second was high taxes. Third was falling prices for agricultural products. And fourth was the high cost of borrowing money.
Farmers began to organize to discuss their problems. They formed local groups called alliances. An alliance member described the result of these discussions. "People began to think who had never thought before. People talked who had never spoken much. Little by little, they began to study their condition. They discussed taxes on income, government ownership of property, the unity of labor, and a thousand other opposing ideas."
Local alliances formed larger groups. The larger groups included many persons who were not farmers, but who lived and worked in agricultural areas. These included teachers, doctors, repairmen, reporters, and church leaders. In 1889, the major alliances held separate conventions in St. Louis, Missouri. They refused to form one big alliance. They were divided on several important issues.
The chief issue was political. Leaders of the Northern Alliance had decided that agricultural interests could expect little help from either the Republican or Democratic parties. They believed the answer to their problems was a third national political party. Leaders of the Southern Alliance disagreed. They belonged to the Democratic Party. And at that time, Democrats faced little opposition in the South. A new party would weaken their political power. So they wanted to work for change within the existing Democratic Party.
Another issue dividing the Northern and Southern alliances was racial. How would a united alliance deal with black farmers? The Southern Alliance did not permit black members, and it did not want blacks in a united alliance. The Northern Alliance said blacks could join. The two groups could not settle their differences before the state and congressional elections of 1890. So they did not campaign as one party, but they campaigned for one idea: help for America's farmers. Throughout the South and Middle West, they succeeded in electing agricultural candidates as governors, state legislators, senators, and members of the House of Representatives.
Farm leaders everywhere were surprised by their election victories in 1890. They had not expected to win so much so quickly. Leaders of the Northern Alliance decided the time was right to form one party to represent all farmers. They felt sure of success. For now, enough leaders of the Southern Alliance were willing to support the idea. These Southern leaders had succeeded within the Democratic Party, but they quickly learned that they held political power only at the local level. They held almost no power at the national level. So, a few months before the presidential election of 1892, America's agricultural alliances held a joint convention in Omaha, Nebraska. They formed a new party. They called it the People's Party. They called themselves populists.
Delegates to the convention approved a policy statement for the new party. The statement said the national government should own the country's railroads, telegraph, and telephone systems. It said the government, not banks, should supply paper money. And it said no limits should be put on government production of silver money. The populists called for a tax on earnings, fewer working hours for labor, controls on immigration. To help farmers, the populists demanded what they called the sub-treasury plan. Under this plan, farmers could put their crops in government storehouses. Then they could wait to sell the crops until prices rose. While they waited, they could borrow money from the government at low cost. They would pay back the loans when they sold their crops.
The new People's Party also proposed ways to make government more democratic. It said secret ballots should be used in all elections. It said senators should be elected by the people, not chosen by state legislatures. Most Americans considered populist proposals extreme. They felt the proposals were too close to socialism or communism. The populists considered their proposals just. They felt their movement was a struggle for more equal control of the nation. On one side of the struggle were producers. These included farmers, laborers, and small businessmen. They were led by the New People's Party. On the other side were what populists called non-producers. These included wealthy bankers and leaders of industry. They were led by the Republican and Democratic parties. Populists wanted producers to have some of the political power traditionally held by non-producers. They wanted producers to get a fairer share of the nation's increasing wealth.
The People's Party chose James Weaver as its candidate in the presidential election of 1892. Weaver had been an officer in the Union Army during America's Civil War. He had served in the House of Representatives, and he had been the candidate of a minor party in the presidential election of 1880. The Republican Party renominated President Benjamin Harrison, and the Democratic Party nominated former President Grover Cleveland.
The campaign began quietly, but a few months before the election, a labor dispute exploded into an important campaign issue. Several thousand steel workers went on strike at a factory owned by the Carnegie Steel Company in Homestead, Pennsylvania. The steel workers' union called the strike after failing to reach a wage agreement with company officials. After months of growing tension, the head of the company sent 300 private security officers to break up the strike and protect non-union workers. The security officers and many of the strikers carried guns. Shots were fired. 10 men were killed. The governor of Pennsylvania immediately sent state soldiers to the steel factory. After a few more attempts to continue the strike, the union admitted defeat. Its power was crushed. It would be more than 40 years before America's steel workers were organized again.
A short time later, state soldiers were used to break up a strike by railroad workers in New York, and federal soldiers were used against striking silver miners in Idaho. This use of government troops to end strikes caused many citizens to vote against the ruling Republican Party. They voted for the opposition Democratic or People's Parties instead. In the election of 1892, Republican President Benjamin Harrison was defeated. Democrat Grover Cleveland, who had lost to Harrison 4 years earlier, would be president again. The People's Party candidate, James Weaver, won 1 million popular votes and 22 electoral votes.
Grover Cleveland returned to the White House, just as his wife had said he would. But his second administration would be much more difficult than his first. Within 2 months of Cleveland's inauguration, the United States entered into one of the worst economic depressions in its history.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow for more stories and information from around the world. Thanks for listening. I'm Ashley Thompson.